Coming at you from downtown Phoenix, Arizona, this is the Benders Podcast with Reagan Smith.
So you're telling me that the New Jersey Devils play boring hockey?
And Carson Roberts.
Have you ever tried sitting through a baseball game?
And as I'm sure you just heard, we're coming at you from downtown Phoenix, Arizona, where it is absolutely gorgeous outside. Nothing but sunshine, I say in a very sarcastic tone.
Because it's wet.
You know what, though? I haven't gotten a car wash since I drove my car down here.
And so. I don't have a car. Oh. So I really don't have to worry about it.
It's a win-win for both of us. Then, yes. Huh? As the intro said, this is the Benders Podcast. I originally had named this thinking that whoever was going to be my co-host for whenever we did this would not know how to skate. That's not the case.
I'm decent enough. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm good at it, you know, because I haven't done a lot of it. But, you know, you can call me a bender. It's fine. It's fine, I guess.
So yeah, this is our very first podcast. We'll see where it goes. I kind of wanted to do this in a more I guess every podcast is conversational, right? But I kind of wanted to do this where it wasn't just this straight, we're going to talk about this. I kind of want to have an overarching themes and kind of see where it goes. And obviously, I don't think there's any other theme bigger than what just happened to fall right into our laps today, just a few hours ago. And that was Toronto giving the axe to Mike Babcock.
Yeah, and you hate to see it happen because Mike Babcock is one of the game's better managers. But, you know, sometimes your team just runs stale. The Toronto Maple Leafs couldn't make a lot of moves or really any moves except subtracting players from their roster because of their cap situation.
Hey, don't dog on Tyson Barry.
Look, I do like Tyson Barry. He isn't what they needed, though. They had enough offense. Their issue was defense, and he's more of an offensive defenseman. They added him, they added Cody Ceci, who's, you know, taken a slide in recent years, at least when you look at, you know, the deep analytics of it, but, they just couldn't do anything. They had to worry about giving Marner an extension. They had to worry about, you know, Austin Matthews with his arrest and all of that. They just didn't have any time to work with the cap, and Kyle Dubas had really just... He doesn't have much to work with at the moment.
Yep.
And that Nylander contract isn't good. They are overpaying certain players and don't have enough money to retain other players. And now you have to deal with adding to a roster that lost in the first round, but they can never get to that point because they're still stuck on the second step of trying to pay their guys. And I think just all of that is culminated into a really slow start of the season, and they really need almost anything else to shake it up.
And obviously, they've lost their last six games. And anyone who has even half a brain about the sport of hockey knew that this firing was going to happen. Like, the writing was just so blatantly on the wall. But it did honestly surprise me that it happened in the middle of the road swing. I expected it to happen. I was really expecting it to happen after their final game against Colorado on their way back. I was kind of shocked that they'd give him the axe, well, right here in Phoenix.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to give it to him after a loss, and they really didn't want to. I mean, you can't fire a guy after a win.
That's true.
So I think, you know, odds are they don't win against Colorado, but I still think that there is that off chance, and they don't want to do it after a win. It sounds dumb. But it's also, you know, Toronto and Toronto hockey media, so you don't really want to take your chances. You kind of want to get these moves out of the way in the middle of a six-game losing streak.
Yeah, and not only that, they're in the middle of a six-game road stand right now. You know,
yeah.
They're going up against Arizona tomorrow. They have Colorado Saturday.
Which is two surprisingly tough teams. You wouldn't have really thought
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
365 days ago, you wouldn't have thought, oh, the Maple Leafs have two real tough games coming up on the road against Arizona and Colorado.
Right.
But, you know, here we are.
But I think at the end of the day, it's an understandable decision. Once that gaping hole just won't stop bleeding, you want to act on as quickly as you can to stop it. And obviously, I think they gave him the axe. And
You know what's interesting? Is they're actually above another high-level team whose coach may be getting a similar treatment, and that would be the Tampa Bay Lightning. They only have 20 points on the season. They're 9-7-2. barely scraping at a positive goal differential. But, I mean, what's going on with this team?
I honestly can't tell you, because the games I have seen them play, they have some games where they've looked awesome, like vintage last year, Tampa Bay. And then I remember very vividly when they played Colorado, and Colorado had no one. And they looked, well, I guess Rantanen was still healthy at that time, but they looked awful. They gave up, I think, 6 goals to the Avalanche, and the Avalanche, when healthy, maybe the best team in the league scoring capability-wise. But it just, something seems off about Tampa, and it's definitely not the talent level, because I don't think it's fair to say that their talent's regressed anything from last year. If not, it's probably gotten better.
They added even
absolutely
more.
Absolutely gotten better.
Especially with Shattenkirk looking like he's a decent hockey player again. But no, they even added on to last year's team, which makes it all the more confusing.
It makes you wonder whether it's just some form of chemistry, whether it's an addition of someone, or if it's even Shattenkirk getting back to his own form, him looking really good again. Does that change how the lines are cooperating with each other, playing time, ice time, all of that, I think, comes to be a factor. But I think, to say the least, this has been a year that I don't think anyone really could have predicted with how it's gone in the first quarter.
Yeah, God, no. I mean, it's a lot of carryover from the playoff sweep last season. I think it's one of those times where, I mean, it's just like with Mike Babcock, John Cooper is one of the game's better coaches,
and
he's one of the better bench bosses. But, man, at some point, I think you just got to make some change, like just to get a new voice in there. Somebody who's maybe a bit louder, maybe more enthusiastic. This is like the kind of team that you need a guy like Torts. Somebody who's going to really whip them into shape and get them to forget everything else. But I don't know. I really think that they might just need a change in culture, because at this point, it seems like the only thing holding them back would be some mental hurdle that's still standing from getting swept and all the previous playoff shortcomings, to say, you know. But that, it's just so weird, because their top line, I mean, it's Tyler Johnson, Braden Point, and Nikita Kucherov. You got you get to put Steven Stamkos on your second line.
Like, exactly.
You really shouldn't have too much problem. And they have like a good mix of, you know, young and old.
Yes.
Their defense is so deep with Hedman, Shattenkirk, McDonough, and Sergachev. But I really don't know. There's not much else you can do except make a change at coach, I feel like.
It's internal is what it comes down to. What that exactly is, maybe not known. But Toronto kind of echoed what you had. Maybe Tampa Bay's getting close to it, and I feel like they are.
I think they have to at least consider it.
I think so, too. I think you give it maybe a week or two more, see what happens. But, it's the end is nigh, so to speak. But
you just can't add any more to the roster.
Exactly. There's no reason Tampa Bay shouldn't be a top three team in this league.
No, God, no. No, not when you have guys like Kucherov and Point, who are two of, like, the best young stars at the moment.
And taking over that Toronto head coaching position will be Sheldon Keefe. The man's got a pretty stacked coaching history, you know, led Sault Ste. Marie in the OHL to a 54-win season when he coached them. He then moved up to take the Toronto Marlies head coaching position, won a Calder Cup in 2018. So Toronto's going in knowing that they're getting a proven winner at head coach.
Was he an assistant coach for them, or is that how he got the spot, or what was it?
He was the head coach for the Marlies, and he moved up. I imagine.
Oh, okay.
That, yeah.
So he just
offered
went from
him
AHL.
A position from the AHL to move up to NHL.
Maybe it turns out how when the Penguins promoted Sullivan from Wilkes-Barre Scranton.
Yeah.
And to replace, who was it? That was so long ago now. Was it Bilsma or was it Johnson? I'm totally forgetting. But it was one of those things where Pittsburgh was underperforming like crazy. Couldn't do much with their cap issues. And nobody thought Malkin and Crosby could win another cup. Then all of a sudden, you could bring in a new voice. For some reason, Carl Hagelin, too.
Yeah.
The HBK line has one of the better second halves ever. And an insane run through the playoffs. But it's one of those things where sometimes it's just getting a new voice to lead the guys. It's nothing. It's never really anything against the coach himself. It's just that you just need a fresh face.
Yeah, it's something that we've seen pretty commonly. You just touched upon it with Pittsburgh. But this move, the movement within your own organization is extraordinarily common with coaching, but when you're looking at, say, let's look at Colorado, Jared Bednar, the Avalanche, who came off very first year he coached. The Avs had the worst season in the NHL in, I think, was 20 years or so.
You just had to take a look at the roster.
But exactly. But at that same point, a year later, leads them to a freaking playoff, and then next year leads them past a 4-1 series victory over the best team in the West, the Calgary Flames. Game 7 loss.
Which got really overshadowed by the Blue Jackets.
Yes.
Because let's not forget, that Flames team, it not only probably had one of the better dynamic duos of the 2018-19 season with Monahan and Gaudreau. It also had more depth than it had, because it had Elias Lindholm was on that top line, and then you had Kachuk on the second line, who was, you know, doing his thing. And then also had Giordano, who was the, you know, did he win the Norris? Can't remember.
I want to say he.
I remember he was like the favorite right around the end of the regular season. Those awards typically cut off. You know, they're.
So they say.
Giordano. Yeah, he. I don't think they should. I really do think the playoffs should be taken into account for MVP and all that. But, you know, he was the best defenseman of that season. So I mean, it's fair to, and I think in that case it would be fair. But no, whole series was overshadowed by the fact that not only the Blue Jackets, but then it was also the Stars over the Predators and the Islanders over the Penguins, and to be fair, they were the higher seed, but in the end, do you really ever expect the Islanders to win a playoff series?
No. The answer is no.
Yeah. Fantastic goaltending, though. It's still even into this season. Grace has a sub-2 goals against average. And
how Varlamov looks like
Varlamov good looks again. Absolutely decent. I wouldn't go so far as to say good, but he's got I think he's got 267 goals against average at the moment, roughly like, I think, 922 save percentage.
For a Varlamov era, though.
No, that's good. Yeah, no, post Capitals, that's good for him.
Yes.
But, still, it's not what they had with Greiss and Lehner last year.
No,
but
absolutely not.
You know what? Give it to Greiss, man. He's really consistent. I think it was tough that he barely got edged by Lehner to get the playoff starts, but you know, both great goalies. At least in that system, they're both great goalies. They haven't really done too much else outside of Long Island. But yeah, man, that's an interesting team. Right now, I think they are second actually in the league in terms of points.
Who would have thought? Capitals number one, sure. Islanders number two, above Boston.
I wouldn't even have the Capitals that high, but the Capitals having a great season. But it's not just the Islanders have 31 points, which puts them on par with Boston and St. Louis and Edmonton for some reason. That's the grouping near the top. But it's the fact that they've only played 19 games. They played two less than pretty much every other team, at least all those four teams. They're 15-3-1. I mean, they're good, and it's so weird to see the Islanders, because at least in our lifetime, they haven't been anywhere near good. They had good players,
but they never could construct a winning team.
Never, no. And it seems it took Barry Trotz, you know, implementing a system with a bunch of vets and Barzal to lead the scoring attack, but I don't know. They're just a fun team. I do respect what they've done, even though I've, you know, always hated Barry Trotz, what with being a Penguins fan and all that.
I think the bottom line it comes down to, wherever Tavares goes, misery and suffering follows. Mm-hmm. And once he's gone, the Islanders become this winning team that shocks everyone. And then those at Toronto. Toronto has a solid season. And then this year, you're just like, huh.
Huh. Well, I wonder what happened there. And, you know, maybe it's just that the Maple Leafs are also cursed, and just as cursed as Tavares, and they were meant to be. But, because, I mean, the Leafs themselves haven't won a cup in 53 years, I want to say.
I want to say Color TV, I don't think existed the last time they won a cup. So
I want to say 66 was the last time they won a cup. But I don't know. I'm not from Toronto. I don't keep track of their cup trout as much as a loyal Maple Leafs fans would, but it still has been way too long for one of the game's most storied franchises. It's almost like how you would expect like the Bears have more than one Super Bowl win.
Yeah,
but nope.
Yeah, I mean, and just kind of looking at the standings as of Wednesday the 20th, I mean, Islanders, you never expect to probably be top 10, let alone number 2 in the standings currently.
Yeah, no. No.
Arizona sits at number 7 in the standings. I mean, I've been saying this for a few seasons now. Arizona's had the ability to be good, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them as a playoff team.
It was a slow
build. This is the year. This is the year that I think it finally comes to fruition. Carolina is number 8. You said that last year. I would have been like, what? Well, this year it makes sense.
Going back to the Coyotes, they look like a playoff team, but are they a team built for the playoffs?
That's another good question, and I guess when you have no playoff experience, you don't know.
They have players with playoff experience, though. They have Hjalmarsson, who has his cups in Chicago. Right. They have Stepan, who came close with the Rangers. So it's not like, I mean, it's not like they don't have any playoff experience. It's just, most of these teams that advance far in the playoffs, it's because of either a solid top line, like a world-class top line,
or
they have some sort of, you know, pairing down the middle. Crosby, Malkin, you know, Backstrom and, I'm forgetting, Kuznetsov for the Capitals. I don't see them as strong down the middle as they need to be. So how do they build to be, you know, built for the playoffs and not just the regular season? Which is something that does, you know, happen to many teams.
Well, how do they build?
Namely the Capitals for many seasons.
How do you build a team that doesn't fall apart at the end of the season? Because I'm going to absolutely make this argument that the Coyotes should have had that secondary wild card spot. The Avalanche should not have made the playoffs last year. Absolutely should not have. But the Coyotes kind of just absolutely crapped the bed the final few games of the year. And the Avs got a little bit of help. But it was the Coyotes' playoff spot to lose, and they absolutely lost it. Mm-hmm. And they had a pretty solid advantage heading into the final week of the season, too.
And they had a good team. They did. The problem was, though, the big problem with that team was they played down to their competition too much. It felt like, you know, they're playing very well against good teams, but when, you know, a team like last year's Edmonton would come around or something like that, they would play down, and you just can't do that in a playoff chase, especially when you're trying, when you're many of these Pacific Division teams, at least last year, it was just going to come down to who the top 3 in the division were. Both, you cannot compete with the Central Division when it comes to locking up on those wild card spots. It's going to be too hard. And they just hung around in the wild card spot too long, and they didn't have that same sense of urgency that, you know, the Avalanche did, because they were playing in the Central Division where it was top level competition day in, day out.
And you know what? And we hardly ever talked about, well, who are the top 3 in the Pacific going to be, because it was pretty much a pretty solid general thing.
Oh, it was.
You had Vegas.
Calgary, Vegas, San Jose.
Vegas, San Jose, Calgary. Yeah. And now, I mean,
look, I mean, San Jose's dropped out a little bit
this year. Yeah, this year, absolutely.
Yeah, they've had their struggles. They don't know how to replace that.
But this year, I think the Pacific Division's in a wide open spot, which we've really not seen in a very long time. Vancouver absolutely has the chance to take the number 3 or 2 seed if they continue on how they've been playing in recent times.
I don't think they can either.
Calgary's right there. I mean, what is it?
Because let's not forget, this is still way too early for any
absolutely.
Of these teams.
We're only, a quarter way through the season?
And I think it was 38 games last year where the Sabres were the number 1 team in the league. All of these teams that we mentioned have outplayed where they probably should be at. Now, they can keep it going, but at best, one of these teams is going to keep it going, and the other ones are going to be competing for the wild card spot at the end of the year.
I think Edmonton's probably a lock for the Pacific. Maybe not to win the Pacific, but to get the
playoff
spot.
I really don't know. No, I think that they have to rely too much on players who won't produce. Like, look, Draisaitl and McDavid going for 1.5 per game.
Number 1 and number 2 in scoring right now.
Yeah, they're both averaging almost 2 points per game. Do I think it's feasible that they average, 1.5 points per game each? Yeah. Is that enough for the Oilers to make the playoffs? I just don't know. I don't see anybody else. They need more on that team. I don't know if Mikko Koskinen can keep up having a .236 goals against average.
Fair.
I don't think he can keep up his, I think he's somewhere around a .930 save percentage, which is pretty freaking high. I mean, this is a guy who last year, Edmonton Oilers fans were cursing because he got handed, $4.5 million a year?
Yeah.
from Lou right before he jumped ship. Or no, Peter Chiarelli, that's what it was.
I don't think
that they, because before the season it was that this team has no depth. I think that once McDavid and Draisaitl, I don't think McDavid will slump, but I think Draisaitl's entirely possible.
I think that's a fair assumption. Maybe not slump, but he's definitely going to slow.
By their standards.
Yes. Okay, fine.
Which would be like a point per game. For sure. It's still insane, but is it enough to carry the rest of that roster? And I don't think it is. Yeah. 2 points a game, yes, that team will make the playoffs. But, I mean, when was the last time somebody averaged 2 points per game?
Exactly.
That's 164 points right there.
And I mean, and that kind of, I think this kind of segues is pretty good into, I guess, our first ever segment that I randomly came up with a name right before the show began and called it Studs and Duds.
It was an impressive feat of Ryan. On par with MC Hammer, I think. I wouldn't say like a good rapper, but I would say MC Hammer.
I wouldn't say a good rapper.
Yes, I would say it. Oh, fair enough. Name four MC Hammer songs.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, if you know, I was fully prepared for you to say, to list four MC Hammer songs.
No.
And my response was going to be, you already know too many MC Hammer songs.
Nope, none in the repertoire. But Studs and Duds, I kind of want to take this from a broader perspective and slowly narrow our way inward. First off, I think the Western Conference, I think, is a lot more fun to talk about this year than in terms of uncertainty than the East is. So I want to start it on the East, and the way I'm going to structure this is starting off broader on the team level than moving in towards a player level, kind of what your biggest surprise of the Eastern Conference is and what your biggest disappointment from the Eastern Conference has been so far.
Man, I mean, I would have to say that's a tough one. I think the surprise is going to have to be... I think that the Flyers are this good. I mean, the Flyers are right on par with the Pittsburgh Penguins and Vegas Golden Knights in, you know, terms of record points, all of that. I didn't really expect that because they didn't get a whole lot of buzz in the offseason. Their goalie situation, it's Carter Hart. He's still young. So I didn't really expect him to, be on a contending team. But now look where we're at. He's on a he's on a contending team, and he's looked fine, I guess. I mean, he could be doing better, but yeah, 272 goals against average is fine for somebody who's, he's like 20 maybe. The dude's young.
Yeah,
but exactly. I mean, they didn't add too much. I think they added Matt Niskanen, which was one of those where I was like, okay, I don't know what you're trying to accomplish, since I'm not really sure where the Flyers are at as an organization, considering they have some old guys, they have some guys in the middle there, and they have some young guys. Right. So it's not like they can go full tank. They just seem like they'd be a middle of the pack team. And they can still get there.
And they are currently.
They technically are.
Number 8 seed currently. I know, too early, but
it's too early, but they're doing better than I thought they would. Personally. Also, they're just a team that we haven't covered yet, because obviously the biggest disappointment would be either the Maple Leafs or, the Lightning. Take your pick. I think that was like the biggest surprise, and then the biggest disappointment would be, I'll go with the Devils. You know what? Okay. We haven't talked about the Devils. Okay. PK Subban, love the guy.
But
he is a fun dude. he's such a great personality. He's taking such a big step back as a player, though.
Yes.
I mean, Grzelcheck just absolutely undressed him the other night. He's supposed to be a number one defenseman on that team, where I think the second best defenseman, Sammy Vatanen, then you got Damon Severson somewhere in there. Nikita Gusev, I think, has been a healthy scratch a couple times here and there, which is really disappointing to see, considering that you want to see that KHL to NHL pipeline work out, but now you have Gusev and you have Kovalchuk, who have both really disappointed early on. They have a really fun fun 1-2 punch in future years with Heeshire and Jack Hughes, but then Jack Hughes took about 8 games to score his first goal, and everybody started getting on edge a little bit. I'm not sure how he's done past then. Do you have his stat line up anywhere?
Pull it up and it's real quick.
Well, number one overall pick, it's looking like Kapo was a little bit more NHL ready, which was expected. I thought Kapo Kako was going to be a lot more NHL ready, considering what he did in the SHL, and the fact that the USNTDP was is still kind of getting there, I guess. I mean, even Austin Matthews took a season overseas, but he came straight from the pipeline. So I think that's a little that was a little bit tough for him. Not to mention he's a little bit smaller in stature. How's he doing?
And Hugh's production hasn't been awful by any means. 10 points in 20 games, half a point a game. But
the problem is this
first rounder pick that was supposed to be this great addition to this team,
and
only
you have
producing half
rookies
a point.
This year.
Exactly.
Like Cale Makar, who is averaging a point per game.
He's
and as a defenseman.
Exactly.
And you have Quinn Hughes, his older brother,
yeah.
Which I hate to bring up the sibling rivalry, but his older brother's a defenseman and outscoring him right now.
Exactly. And it hurts when you literally have 1 point in your last 5 games.
Yeah.
And that was an assist against Montreal.
And then now, and the worst part about it is this pretty much seals the fate that Taylor Hall's moving on.
Yeah.
This was,
yep.
As a franchise, like I mean, they're a divisional rival of the Penguins, so obviously I'm not a huge fan of the Devils, but I always did love Martin Brodeur as a player, and they always had, like, you know, a fun team
exactly.
to follow.
Exactly.
They're one of those that introduced the dead puck era, which for all of its ups and downs, I thought it was a pretty entertaining in terms of seeing expansion teams and some of these, you know, small market teams win, and I thought that was great, and they were one of those teams that kind of helped to push that. But, man, Hall's going to be gone at this point. Hughes is going to have to pick up the pieces with Heeshire.
Yeah.
You don't know what they're going to do with that Subban contract. The rest of the roster is just, who knows, who cares at this point. I mean,
they're a middle of a pack team is what they're...
Well, they're just, there's nothing exciting about them.
There's nothing exciting.
They're, right now, they're basically like, in terms of how good as a team, they're on the same level as the Senators. But at least the Senators, you get to see so many young guys. This team still has so many old guys.
So you're telling me that the New Jersey Devils play boring hockey.
I don't think any kind of hockey is boring. I think people who say boring hockey are clearly watching too much hockey and need to look at other sports. Have you ever tried sitting through a baseball game? Have you ever, I mean, football even, I get bored from it because there's so much stop and go. But basketball, I think it's a little bit monotonous. And then there's hockey, which is just constant go, full go, constant line switches. If you think anybody is playing boring hockey, then I really don't know what to tell you. You're just a hard-to-please person, and I really feel bad for your significant other, if there is one.
I guess now, who's impressed you the most from the East, player-wise?
Player-wise. Wow. Way to drop that one. I was not expected. I was expecting a team. But I'll say John Carlson.
Okay.
Look, I mean, as much as I you know, I've respected him as a defenseman because him and Backstrom were always the two unsung heroes of the Capitals. It was always Ovi. It was always Kuznetsov. But really, that team lived and died off of having Backstrom at center, being one of the most consistent, reliable guys in the league, and John Carlson leading a pack of really young defensemen or just guys who didn't have much offensive skill back there.
Yeah.
But he was always, like, one of the better defensemen in the league. Even if he wasn't exactly the lead on defense, he was amazing offensively. And now he has 35 points.
As a freaking defenseman.
Sorry, 35 points in 23 games.
Yep.
Fourth, tied with Marchand for third in the league. It's insane. He was averaging 2 points per game for a while.
Yeah.
From the back end.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been incredible. It's somehow a breakout, even though he's been broken out for, like, years. But, I think among players in the East, yeah, that's my guy. That's definitely the biggest surprise.
Biggest disappointment for you?
As a player?
As a player.
Man.
Oh, that doesn't mean they have to be playing bad, but...
Yeah, no, I think...
You know,
man, I want to say Hughes just because as the number one overall pick, you expect a little bit more.
I hate saying
a rookie is my most disappointed.
That's fair too.
I expected more from Nikita Gusev. That's the one guy I think that where I was like, if someone needs to step up, it's going to be Gusev because you can have Heeshire and Hughes and Hall, but really you need a fourth guy.
Yeah,
the Flames were always middle of the pack, even though they had Gaudreau and they had Monahan, and they had Katchuk, but it was once they added in Lindholm where it's like they kind of started to take off as a team. They needed that fourth guy, and, you know, seeing Gusev struggle is what really, I think, killed them offensively. Yeah.
And when referring back to Hughes, I think I'd be inclined to agree with you, because I agree it's hard to call a rookie disappointing, but I think you at least expect an average two-thirds a point, you know, three-quarters of a point a
game. He's getting there.
Because he was scoreless for 8 games. And the biggest argument I think you have to make here is that, like, when you don't have a team around you that's playing at the caliber that they expect, how can you be expected to play at the caliber you were expected to play at, that everyone else was? For me, though, who's really surprised me this year, and it really, I guess, isn't a surprising thing as much as it is consistently and just not hearing about it, is Patrick Kane again's having another solid season. And And for another year, we're really not even talking about it, you know? And
he's Western Conference. Talking Eastern Conference. Oh, yeah, no, but it's okay.
I forgot. Yeah.
Segway. We're talking Western Conference now.
Western Conference type. Yeah.
Chicago should be East. They're very far East.
You'd think, being a Avalanche fan, that'd be the first thing in my mind. Central Division rival. Right?
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah.
It's been a day, apparently. Holy moly.
It has been a long one. I'll give you that.
Patrick Kane has been
amazing.
Consistent, surprisingly, always good. 28 points, 21 games played, 11 goals, 17 assists.
He's most likely had an impact on DeBrincat too.
Yeah.
Being where he's at.
And Chicago's, honestly, they're not my biggest surprise, but they've also surprised me with how not awful they are, I guess.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Middle of the pack right now.
I expected them to be worse than where they are. Minnesota's kind of surprised me in that regard, actually. But Minnesota's not bad enough to tank, and that's their issue.
It's true. Minnesota, I think out of all the teams with, like, dull futures, they might have the dullest.
That's going to be a rough thing, because they're not rebuild mode just yet, but yet they're on that cusp.
They're not playoff.
When they do enter rebuild, they still won't be bad enough to absolutely tank.
Yeah, no, they're just no man's land. They're about 5 years from... The worst part is, like, I think they're, like, 5 years from, like, a first overall pick.
Yep.
That can, like, actually help them.
Yeah, the state of hockey's in for a rough one, I think.
It is, yeah. It's a bad state in the state of hockey.
For the Western Conference, for you, though, I guess you can pick a team, you can pick a player. Who's kind of surprised you the most here?
Oh, it's got to be the Oilers. I mean, shit. Sorry, shoot. Whatever. I don't know if we're allowed to swear on this.
I don't know either. We'll figure that one out.
We'll figure it out if someone gets angry, I guess. But, yeah, no, it's got to be the Oilers. Right now, they're tied with the Blues for the top of the conference. For some reason, this team isn't tanking. I don't know where it came from. It's not like they made any changes.
No, exactly. I don't know how you can go from dumpster fire last year to...
It makes no sense. It's literally just McDavid and Draisaitl going off.
I think it goes back to what you had said. If you're producing 2 points a game, you can kind of...
That's fine.
Maintain it. I mean, you're essentially... providing the whole work is what one full top line would be producing.
And Koskinen is also doing well.
Yeah.
You don't know how long any of this is going to last. That doesn't mean I'm not surprised by it. It is incredible. And the fact is, like, they're tied with the Blues, but the Blues have a +3 goal differential. The Edmonton Oilers have a +13. They're doing better than the Blues are right now.
Yeah.
I just don't know where it came from. It's to the point where I can't even analyze the team because I just don't understand how it's working. Has it, like, what changed? I don't know. I really don't know what changed with the team. So that has to be the most surprising.
To me, I think it has to be St. Louis coming back from an oof of a beginning of the season to all of a sudden being a team that looks like they could easily repeat being Stanley Cup champions. And they lost some decent players with Maroon leaving, but
Maroon was big, especially at the salary hit.
Yeah, referring back to Tampa Bay,
they got big.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I would not expect right now St. Louis to be first place in the West. No. Especially even going off of last year, last place in what, January, but December?
I don't know who I expect to be at the top of the West.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess Vegas, that was probably would have been my pick, but even then, Vegas isn't a top of the conference team. Like that's one of those teams where I said, you build for the regular season, build for the playoffs.
Yeah.
They're built for the playoffs. They've shown that 2 years, two good playoff runs. Yep. It's, but no, they're usually, I mean, they're a team where you're like, yeah, no, that's a three seed.
Yep.
So that's just where they're
all at. All of a sudden tied lead in the Western Conference. I didn't expect it. I honestly, before the season began, I thought St. Louis would head a real big sophomore slump.
Hold up. I'm just seeing something now, and this is a Western Conference team that I feel like we need to mention. How are the Winnipeg Jets have 27 points?
In that minus four goal differential to boot?
Look, yeah, I saw that. That's actually how I noticed it, because I'm looking, I'm like, oh, look at all this green.
Green,
the,
green, green,
then
red.
The red, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Winnipeg. But they started the season, they were double-shifting Neil Pionk.
Yeah.
And now they're above the Canadiens, they're above the Stars, they're above the Penguins and Knights.
I think it really falls down to the fact that the Central Division has been really, really weak this year.
Yeah.
I didn't expect Dallas to... Dallas has definitely moved their way back up from where they started. But I didn't expect Minnesota to be as bad as they were. Chicago has been, I guess, middle of the pack, which is better than I thought. But Minnesota's more than making up the lack of points there.
Predators have been bottom
third. Predators have been shockingly oof.
Well, that's just because they're so... That's one of those teams that I think just got stale.
Yeah.
I mean... Like, again, Pete Laviolette is a fantastic coach. He's one of the best in the game's history. But that team got stale. Their power play got stale, so it fell apart.
Yep.
All of their lines haven't changed in the last, 2 years, pretty much. Yep. They've been expecting Tolvanen to come up for a couple seasons now, and he hasn't been able to take that next step because outside of his shot, he hasn't developed many tools. Yeah.
And the West, I think, as a whole, just feels generally weak. Calgary's on, a four-game skid right now. They're... Freaking only have 20.
Games, actually.
They're only 1 point ahead of the Chicago Blackhawks. San Jose, I'd argue, has been my biggest shock disappointment from the West this year.
I didn't think Pavelski would hurt that much. I didn't think
Didn't think so either.
Like you think, and, yeah, no, that's gonna suck for them. But going from the top of the league to,
you knew San Jose bottom, would be worse, but I didn't have them outside the top three.
It was an extreme drop.
But
they're starting to recover.
They're
6-4 in the last 10. But this team is
San Jose's absolute star. I mean, they are no Los Angeles Kings, who have absolutely no hope for their future this season already. Mm-hmm. Call it a wash. I think they're already on tank mode.
Yeah.
But minus 13 goal differential it is pretty awful.
It's pretty bad. It's the inverse of the Oilers.
Of the top teams, yeah.
But it's also from Martin Jones is in goal, and he was just 3 years ago. He was one of the game's better goaltenders.
And now he's a butt of a lot of jokes. It's just what happened to the San Jose team all of a sudden? Maybe it's the losing in the second round of the playoffs year after year, but. I don't know. San Jose's just fallen off, and their even strength goal.
And that's a team that should have lost in the first round, too.
Absolutely.
I will go to my grave saying that. What's it? Holla.
Wasn't a 5-minute major.
It wasn't. No, not even remotely.
No.
It wasn't a 5-minute major. I would even hesitate to say it was a 2-minute minor. It probably was.
I'll give it.
But
a 2 minutes.
It was also the fact that. I mean, I'm pretty sure, I haven't seen the video in a while, but I'm pretty sure he was pushed into him, which,
yes.
You know, that wouldn't be anything. I didn't even think, him falling wasn't even that bad. It's just that he happened to hit his head when he hit the ice. Like, the hit wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a bad injury, and obviously they're looking for retribution because of that injury. Pavelski, thank God, he recovered.
Yeah.
He's still good. That's the one thing you worry about. But also, the Sharks should not have won that game. That was incredible. And to face our good friend Michael Gutnick was hard after that.
Yeah.
Because everybody was like, shut up. You should have lost. You know it. But
I will say, I don't think I would have gotten the opportunity. Because I went to games 4 and game 6 of the second round of the playoffs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And game 6 was the game that Avs were down 3-2 in the series, came back and won in overtime to send it to game 7. Game 7 is also filled with enough controversy. I won't talk on it because whatever. But, I expected San Jose to be worse. But the fact that they're not... they have, what, I think currently speaking, a 56% chance of not getting the playoffs. And they give up their first pick to Ottawa this coming draft. Like, if they don't make the playoffs, they are in a world of hurt going ahead.
Say what you want about Ottawa, but if not for that draft lottery, they would have absolutely killed everything about the... They gave their pick to the Avalanche, not the other way around. Yep. The Avalanche got screwed by the draft lottery.
I'm used to it.
It turned out all right. You got Cale McCarr. And then you got Byron Bowen. Yep. Yeah. So you ended up with two of the game's next best defensemen.
Retrospect, absolutely the best thing that's ever happened to the Carr.
Yeah.
But McCarr's on pace for a 90-point season, and he's a defenseman? Like,
yeah.
Holy moly. And
but say what you want about the Senators. They kind of killed the rebuild. They went through every terrible thing. But once they knew they were bad, and they probably should have known that a little bit earlier, even knowing that, you know, seeing that they had a negative goal differential and then made it to the ECF on playing trap hockey, I think they should have blown it up after that, which would have been hard with the fans, but that team wasn't good. But really, I mean, they have Eric Brandstrom now.
Yeah.
They have a very solid and wide-ranging group of young guys coming up.
Ottawa's youth and development system, I think, is going to be a huge boon for them in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're on pace for mediocrity for the next 5-6 years. They're definitely, I think the worst is over for them.
Definitely, yeah.
To the appeal of all those French Canadians out in Ottawa.
I don't know if there's many French Canadians. Is it Ottawa, Ontario? Yeah, they're in Ontario. You're thinking of Quebec.
But they do their announcements in both, so.
Do they really?
They do.
Huh, interesting.
They do. I could be way wrong. I'm fairly certain they do, though. Because I always thought Ottawa would be weird to have French as part of, like, their game day presentation, but I'm fairly certain it is.
Interesting.
Huh. Weird tangent we just went off of.
Weird tangent, yeah. No, it's, now we're talking about Canadian citizenship. It's We talk about a lot of things on this show, but I really just want to get into Canadian politics.
Speaking of Canadian politics, actually, this is more Canadian religion. Montreal, decent again this year. Decent for the first time in a while.
Yeah, they look actually good. That's another big
surprise. I think that's a storyline to focus on. I think they'll be middle of the pack once this year's said and done. But where they are currently is a bit of a surprise.
I think they'll end up as the best of the Canadian teams.
In the East, you don't Edmonton.
Yeah, I think that. Well, I already told you. I think Edmonton's gonna slide.
Okay, fair. But you think?
And I think Montreal keeps this pace for the rest of the season.
Okay.
I mean, it really depends on if the Maple Leafs can make an insane comeback. Because here's the thing, they have the third best record right now among Canadian teams.
Right.
They're behind Edmonton and Winnipeg.
Winnipeg won't hold it.
Well, Winnipeg
may, but. It's the Central Division. Central Division's so weak they can. But
it's also, can they add a defenseman? If they can add a defenseman, look, then I have to roll back my take. But that's also way in the future, nearer to the trade deadline. So I think I'm justified in being wrong.
Okay, fair. I think Edmonton wins the Pacific, if I'm being honest with you.
Really?
I think Draisaitl will fall a bit, but I think Edmonton and McDavid and Draisaitl can still carry
that. It's weak enough at this point.
They're
guaranteed three spots. Basically, are they a top three team in there?
I think Vancouver can also finish with a better... I know we're comparing West to the East right now, mm-hmm. but I think Vancouver can even finish with a better record than Montreal. And it still wouldn't surprise me to see Vancouver somehow pick up that third spot in the Pacific. I don't think it'll happen.
I don't know if they can. I don't like their goaltending.
Fair enough. I think, realistically speaking, I think it goes... Edmonton, believe it or not, I'm going to put the Coyotes at number two.
That's fair. Kemper's been amazing.
And I'm going to put Vegas at that third Pacific spot.
You know what they could do? They could try flipping, because Kemper's been on fire. He's been
incredible.
I mean, even the past couple years, he's looked like the better of the two goaltenders, or at least he's the one who's hotter right now in his career. Ronta's been on the way down. He's still good. Don't get me wrong. But he's not a guy you need as a backup. You can get somebody else.
He's cheaper.
Flip him.
Yeah.
For somebody, the Coyotes still have one of the worst shooting percentages as a team in the league. It's gotten a little bit better from last year when it was historically low, think it was roughly like 7%.
That was ridiculous.
But they need more shooters. They need more people making plays from the back end. They need more offensive firepower. Right now, they're scratching and clawing, man. It was their motto from last year, but that's basically how they win games.
Yep.
You don't know how they do it unless you watch them play and you're like, yeah, okay, they're just working hard. Connor Garland isn't an extremely talented player, but he gets his points because...
Garland, do you think he'll fall off? I like the hype train that surrounds him.
I don't know.
I just don't see it. Continue.
Well, here's the thing. It's also, did Victor Arvidsson ever really fall off? He stayed pretty good.
Fair.
They're both smaller, scrappy, and I think that... I mean, Garland scored a goal with his face last year. Guys who are willing to score goals with their faces typically don't fall off. They at least serve a purpose.
Right.
I like the guy. I like the Cardinals. I don't like the Cardinals, but I like the Coyotes as a whole. They're a fun franchise, even though people seem to think they play boring hockey. But no, I think that they need to flip Ronta for, I don't know, maybe some young offensive product who could be struggling.
Who may be wearing a number 9, maybe, on a Eastern Conference team that may rhyme with Melville's.
Maybe. Who knows?
Maybe not.
Maybe convince him to stay.
Maybe.
He might like the weather. Maybe.
I think bottom line, it's a trade bait. Ronta is absolute trade bait. And if you're looking at a team like the freaking Colorado Avalanche, who literally had to pull up, who until I think almost game time against Calgary, they had 4 goalies on their dressed roster. Mm-hmm. Like, holy moly. Hey, first off,
you know, it's like when you see somebody with like, it's they're like, fine, keep track of the ball, and they put like cups down, and then it's like, who are we gonna start tonight?
Yeah. And when you have a team that's apparently as injury prone as the Colorado Avalanche have been cursed with mm-hmm. being this year, granted they've found a way to win, which is impressive in its own right, I guess, but I don't know, the Avs don't have a secondary.
I barely think that they have a starting goaltender. I don't like Grubauer as a number one option for the playoffs, at least. I think I trust Ranta a little bit more.
He proved himself pretty well last season, but
can he keep doing it? Do you think he'll be consistent?
I do, only because I think the Avalanche have just a deadly offensive attack to where they can afford to allow one or two oof goals a game, I feel like.
Now, you mentioned a certain number 9 on a certain Eastern Conference team, and I think we both know that's the Devils and Hall, but I get Hall's been traded for Adam Larson, but can you flip, if you're a team as bad as the Devils are right now, can you really flip your best player for an older goaltender? What would be the point in that? Unless if you had another trade set, or this was like a 3-team trade with how Duchesne got moved to the Preds. That's the only way you could see the Cardinals, or, oh my God, I keep doing it. Sorry. I cover football, I swear. But the Coyotes getting Hall and giving up Ronta.
Right.
Is there need to be a third team in there, which could possibly be the Avalanche, or the Canucks, who we have talked briefly about. They have a lot of young prospects that could get sent New Jersey's way in exchange for Ronta. But I don't know. I think it's something that I just really think Ronta needs to get flipped for some sort of outside scoring or in any kind of scoring. I've said it before. I don't like their current center rotation.
And I guess it kind of comes down to, I don't think there's a team right now that's... I'll argue the Avalanche, but it's because of injury. But that has a goaltending situation that's really like, uh-oh, like we really need something to get going. Maybe San Jose. San Jose, who you can make an argument for.
San Jose, Vancouver, possibly Pittsburgh. Matt Murray's had a few bad seasons now. I think it might be time to consider an alternative option. Kind of like when Fleury was struggling, so they brought in Thomas Vokoun. Didn't work out. Focun was good though.
Yeah.
but there's a ton of teams. There's always gonna be a need for goaltenders among contending teams, because in the end you're gonna get guys like Grubauer last year, or Mrazek with the Hurricanes. Hurricanes, another possible landing spot.
Yeah.
There's teams out there. There's a market for Ranta. They just need to
I don't think the Coyotes have enough with themselves as an organization. Unless you're
trading, I don't think they want to.
Unless you're trading draft picks, which I don't think they want to, because I think they're starting to realize that, hey, this is our rise. We have maybe the next 3-4 years to really cement ourselves before everything kind of goes into the unknown. Maybe Austin Matthews comes in 5 years, maybe he doesn't.
I just don't think they want to trade Ranta. I think bottom line,
I think they're fine with the tandem.
They like their tandem, even though they're committing. Oh man, $8 million. I think Ranta's getting paid, like, they're both getting paid roughly 4-ish.
Is it winning them games? Yeah. So I mean, if you're the Coyotes right now, why would you change something that's working as of now? I don't think you want to.
Working as of now, but if they slump near the trade deadline, I think you gotta do it.
Yeah, I agree.
One of those trade deadline forced moves, because it's like, oh my god, your back's against the wall, and you're like, do I really want to go forward with this team? And because let's face it, I mean, they got a lot of older guys on that team. They have Hjalmarsson, who's still doing well for them. They have Demers, they have Stepan. You don't know how much longer these guys are going to stick around in Arizona. You don't know how much longer they're going to stick around the league. So you got to get the most out of them you can while they're still working well with your younger guys.
I think, I don't know, I think if you can pick one team from the East to be the team you're going to watch out, like really focus on, who do you think it'd be?
Tampa Bay. I think that being this bad right now is a blessing in disguise for them. Because the main theory last year of why they lost in the first round was they didn't play enough important hockey. Now, I think now they're going to need to play a little bit too much important hockey, but because now they're walking a very, very fine line.
Right.
But I think in the end, if they can manage to sneak in the playoffs with that roster and a whole big chip on their shoulder, that will be a dangerous team. Because every year they failed, it's been because they've had such high expectations, because they've had Stamkos, and then back when Kucherov was still coming up, and they had Hedman, and they had Bishop, and then Vasilevsky. But yeah, no, it's gotta be Tampa Bay. If I'm watching one team from the Eastern Conference, it's gonna be Tampa Bay, because I want to see them overcome adversity. They need this. The fan base needs this.
Yeah. To me, I think it's Florida. I think Florida's finally showing themselves that, hey, we exist, and we're actually worth kind of taking note on.
Barkov and Trocheck are a very solid 1-2 punch.
I would say, look at Huberto right now. 28 points currently.
You mean
hoobie-doobie-doo?
Where are you?
Even Yandel has, like, been
surprisingly good. He was very good last year.
Really good.
I think he was an all-star last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been very good. He's just been overpaid.
Yeah.
That's the only problem. Nobody knew why they handed him that huge contract.
And then, obviously, you bring in Bob.
Babo.
Frank
Vedrano's been fine.
Yeah. Florida, I'm excited to see, because I think they can be a really fun team to watch. Can they keep up? They're 11-5, and I want to say, like, 3 right now. I don't know. I know they have 5 losses and 11 wins. I don't know what their OTLs
are. They are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Why does my page keep refreshing? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th in the league right now with an 11-5-5 record, plus 3 goal differential, which is walking a fine line, yeah. But it's doable. They can do better. It's another thing where you kind of want to just see them add at the deadline, because I want to see even more scoring. Like, I like Dadonov as a player. He's good. I don't know about their bottom 6.
I think they're a fun team to watch, and I'm excited to see. I think from
about the Western Conference.
It's going to sound stupid. I really want to ride this Coyotes bandwagon, because I've said it's going to happen for the past 2 years, and this year it seems like it's finally going to happen, knock on wood. And I think the Coyotes are just kind of overdue at this point. I think fan base especially. Obviously, we live here in Phoenix. We've seen hockey grow in just the past 3 years. I just think that it's kind of, they're reaching their time, and right now the Pacific's weak enough to where they don't have to be the strongest by any means, and the Central's weak enough currently, because there's so many teams in these transitional periods to where that you don't have to be a great team like arguably Boston, Washington, Colorado when they're healthy. Like, those teams are in their prime, but so many teams aren't, and Arizona's definitely on that upper end of, they're not rebuilding, they're getting better, but they're out of their rebuilding phase, and they're on their rise, and I think this is kind of their opportunity to show that, like, hey, you're going to have to keep an eye on us for the next few years.
Hey, I'm watching the Stars.
Okay.
It's
fair.
That's a team where they have had a solid month. They start off really, really bad too. But their top line of, I mean, Sagan and Ben, whether it's the coach, the front office, anybody doubting them, they're still together. They're still doing fine, just fine. Now, I haven't really kept track of them too much, but that's why I'm going to start keeping track of them now. I've always loved Klingberg. Klingberg has been one of my favorite players ever since I did my only season of fantasy hockey, and he, like, was my leader among my defensemen and pretty much helped me win that championship. But love him. Roope Hintz is one of the – for some – he came out of nowhere, but he is – has been one of, like, the bigger revelations for them, because that was a team, the Stars, they had that top line of Radulov, Ben, and Sagan, but their depth was never there, and it finally seems like he was that last piece that they needed to compete in the playoffs. And then they made a pretty decent run, lost a close series to the Blues.
Yeah.
Ben Bishop's looking really good. Anton Kubotin's looking very, really good. I don't know, they're a fun team. I think that they're a lot better than their record suggests right now, and I think that they'll eventually climb to the top of not to the top, but they'll be one of the locks from the Central Division. I don't think they're going to have to compete for a wild card this year.
Fair. And I think kind of to go off of that, you just kind of mentioned it, but to kind of put it into definitive words, their scoring situation has been extraordinarily spread out. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no one who's really scoring a lot more than anyone else. I mean, looking from being tied for fifth place all the way to first, there's only a 7-point differential there, and that's Foxa.
You'll get there.
I can't speak today either. But I mean, Sagan with 18, and you know, Radulov still has 11. I mean, how often do you see teams that are that wide open between eighth place and scoring has 8 points, and then first place has 18. I mean, that's seven players all within.
It's more spread out than you're used to.
Yeah,
the Stars.
It's not what you normally see.
Yeah, it's they're definitely a fun team. They're more fun than they have been recently.
Absolutely,
I'll give them that. And with, like you said, with the Central Division being weaker and the Blues seeming to be like the top team in that division, they're kind of sneaking up. I don't think Winnipeg holds on. I think Colorado is going to be challenging with the Blues, but I think Dallas gets that third spot.
Fair enough.
And I think fair enough. Is that a good place to end it?
I think.
Is it a fair enough place to end the podcast?
I think it is. I think it was okay. I think this is an okay start to
podcast. I think it was.
I think
if anybody has any objections, you can always, you know, hit
DM
us
me,
up.
Bro. DM me, bro. No.
Slide in my DMs, because they're really, really dry. They're drier than Phoenix on most days. Today, Phoenix is very wet. It's raining.
It's been a very wet day.
Super wet day. But my DMs are usually like its usual very dry weather. It's a dry heat. It's a very dry heat, as people tell you the second you get here and you freak out about it being hot.
Ideally, I think we're going to look to do this maybe bi-monthly, kind of talk like how we did. We're not going to focus on every little nitty-gritty storyline that we do.
I don't really want it to be structured too much. It's I like it being loose. It's more conversational. It's how friends talk, because we are friends.
That's news to me. I thought we were just colleagues.
Well, I don't have a lot of friends. So basically, it's kind of like a... It's almost like a... It's like relative. Friends are relative. See, I don't have many actual friends, so my acquaintances are automatically like my friends.
Gotcha.
People I see are friends. You, on the other hand, are super popular and have tons of friends. So when you see me as an acquaintance, you're like, yeah, no, that's just an acquaintance. I know what that is. I can't identify an acquaintance.
No, but I get what you're saying, because it's like me and dogs. I see a dog, and it's like I own that dog, and that dog will like...
Are you saying you own me? That's illegal.
No, I'm saying, like, I get what you're saying with friends and acquaintances, because I see a dog I've never met before, and I'm like, yeah, this dog's mine, yeah.
That's my dog, yeah.
It's mine now.
I don't like dogs. I don't like any animals, to be fair. I'm just going to put that on the record.
Right. Well, thanks for watching.
I'm going to get kicked off for that now.
But, no, I enjoyed this. We'll see how this goes from here on out. I like the fact that it wasn't just, like, these segments upon segments. I like this idea of see where everything leads and go from there.
Just go with the flow.
Just go with it. Absolutely.
I'm throwing a swear word in there. Just keep it real laid back.
I think next we'll probably be back to film another one first week of December right before we head out.
Then there'll be a little bit of a break because we'll be in separate
states.
Yeah.
We'll Skype each other and do this.
We'll be separated by so many miles. When will my husband return from war in Denver?
January 13th, I think.
That's so late. Yeah, I guess I gotta be here the 10th.
Oof.
Yeah.
Actually, I need to be here earlier for my internship, so.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see. All right. Well, we might be back here sooner if people enjoyed this. I hope. I don't know. I did. If you didn't, then fight me.
This is my first podcast. Probably. Is this your first podcast as well?
I've done a couple. I did a hockey one with our good friend Nick Frias. We did like 2 episodes. Right. I've jumped on the Enforcers. We were on the same episode,
yes.
Actually.
I remember that now. Yeah.
That was a good one. Yeah.
It's a learning curve.
I was trashing Patty because they were doing a player. It was like March or whatever, and they're doing a player bracket, and she picked like Ovi was like in like the final. I didn't like that at all. It was something weird like that. I didn't like that. Anyways.
Either way, it's a learning experience. That's for damn sure.
A lot of this might get cut out.
And
or none of it gets cut out.
Or none of it gets, yeah. It depends how like in depth I want to go on this edit.
It depends how much we care about you, the viewer. Or listener.
It's a lot, I swear.
All right.
Anyways, we will see you, I guess, when we see you. And I'm sure we all have homework to get to. And
yep.
I've held you long enough, so.
I have.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for being my sidekick analyst buddy, Carson.
Thank you for asking me. Now, I say that we end this by an honorable forehand shake. Warrior grip.
Oh, forehand. No, yeah. Oh, there we go.
Forearm, yes. There we go.
I went for the stand.
We are brothers in arms.
You know why they used to do this?
Why?
At least why I've been.
Because people's hands were dirty and they were germophobes?
No, I was told it was because so someone want to pull a weapon on you.
Oh,
yeah. Which I guess you still have your other hand free, which doesn't
make
any sense.
You can just
shiv someone.
Yeah. Wow. I'm not going to shiv you. But that's what I want you to think. All right.
We'll see you guys.
Goodbye.